I too was shifting to the color of blood. My body clenched in expectant horror, waiting for the sky to turn to blood as the roof of the yurt had, and fall on me. Then I felt warm wetness seeping over my cheeks, and I realized the blood was coming from my head, not from the sky. I touched the place on my brow where I'd hit on the branch. An ache radiated down through my nose and cheekbones, and I felt a swelling lump and a deep, open laceration. I wiped the blood from my eyes and realized suddenly that the thrumming of the swarming moth's wings were gone, and a far worse sound had replaced it. Now there was only one set of wings beating the air, distant but moving closer and closer, a sound that was at once as soft as a whisper and as loud as an approaching helicopter. My eyes, filling with blood again, searched the sky and found its source. A single moth, its wingspan as wide as my outstretched arms, descended through the sky, wings bone white with bloated black moons floating in their centers. I tried to scream, to move, to do anything. My body was frozen. "It's not real," I told myself. "It's not real. It's not real." But I felt the wind of its wings on my face, made out specks of dust shimmering in the air around those massive wings. Then its tongue, its proboscis, unfurled, a glowing white whip as thick as my pinky finger, a swollen, tangible twin of the strands of energy that uncoiled from me when I took anima. It wasn't real. It was not real. It was so close now I could reach out and touch it. If I had not been paralyzed with fear, I would have batted at it with my arms, pummeled it, clawed at its furry thorax. Instead, I lay prone and immobile, waiting for the moth to do what it would to me. It touched down on my chest, heavy as a soaking wet pillow, its eyes black and empty as a crow's. Its wing beats slowed, and its long lash of a tongue probed at the gash in my forehead, pressing into it like a man-eating vine, slipping beneath the skin. Then, without warning, as though it had tasted something it didn't like, the behemoth of a moth withdrew its tongue and beat its wings like a bellows. It lifted into the sky and vanished into the treetops.
"Kenna!"
I recognized Cyrus's voice calling from somewhere nearby. Then he was by my side, falling to his knees. His hands checked my head wound, fingers gentle. But I shuddered at the memory of the moth's tongue worming through the seeping laceration.
"I'm so sorry,"
Cyrus said, removing his shirt and pressing it to my bleeding forehead.
"I never should have let you try that anima."
"I should have listened to you," I said, my voice weak, barely audible. I wondered vaguely how bad the injury on my head was, how much blood I had lost. "Did you see it?" I asked. Cyrus shook his head.
"What?"
"The moth. It was just here." Cyrus's brow furrowed, and he raised his eyes to search the sky.
"No,"
he said.
"I didn't see anything."
"It was as big as me, Cyrus. It was real." Even in the dark, I could see the concerned expression on his face. He said nothing, only gathered me in his arms and lifted me like I weighed no more than a sack of fall leaves. He carried me all the way to Eclipse House. I hid my face against his chest, eyes shut tight, afraid to open them. Afraid the monstrous moth would change its mind and return for me. For my blood. Awake. The next morning I woke before dawn, but not in my bed. I sat up, blinking in the hazy pre-dawn light, the previous night's events shuffling into place in my brain. The dreaming tent, the midnight glory anima, the dead, the blood, the moth. I remembered everything. I wished I didn't. I was in Rebecca's room, in her bed. Cyrus had carried me, fading in and out of consciousness, all the way back to Eclipse House and up three flights of stairs to Rebecca's room, where she had opened up her cupboard and brought out one of her culling jars for me. I didn't see the shape of this jar, didn't know what kind of anima was inside. Instead of letting me cull the anima itself, she culled it and channeled it into me, the way I had done for my family, like she wanted to take care of me, And she had. The ache in my head had vanished instantly, and I felt the flesh of my forehead knit itself whole. Such a strange sensation, like closing a zipper on your own skin. And then my bad trip had turned into a euphoric waking dream, my blissed-out body seeming to float several inches above the floor as color and light and soft sensation embraced me. I drifted on a warm river and eventually ended up in a sleep filled with safe, impregnable dreams. I swung my legs over the side of the bed. Cyrus was crashed out on floor pillows, shirtless, one arm flung over his face. He snored faintly, which I found endearing. I resisted the urge to kneel down beside him and touch the bare skin of his back, to experience the smoothness of it again. The warmth that radiated from him. As he'd carried me from the forest, I had kept my face nestled against his chest, breathing in his scent, warming my shivering body against his. Seeing him so soundly asleep, I felt a surge of affection for this hippie cowboy. He had tried to protect me from myself last night, and I'd ignored him. But he'd still come after me. If he hadn't, I might still be alone and lost in the forest, afraid to move for fear of calling the attention of that thing, that moth with its curious, probing tongue. But that monstrosity hadn't been real, had it? Certainly the hallucinations of Jason and Thomas Dunn, and of my family and the blood raining down on me weren't real. The moths in Jason's killing jar weren't real. So why should the mega moth, that impossibly huge creature, be real? Rebecca stood on her balcony, looking out at the green mountains and the silver sky, speckled with a few tenacious stars. She turned her head when I stepped outside. The morning air was dewy. It clung to my skin like wet silk. I came up beside Rebecca and leaned against the railing. For a moment, neither of us said anything. I wanted to thank her for healing me and bringing me fully out of my bad trip, for taking care of me like I was her responsibility, her own child. But I was embarrassed to bring it up, embarrassed that I couldn't handle the midnight glory enema. I didn't want to be a burden to Rebecca. Rebecca saved me the trouble of figuring out what to say by speaking first. "Cyrus tells me you saw the mother last night," she said. I blinked at her, thinking I must have heard her wrong. "No, I didn't see my mom," I told her. A hallucination of her, yes, but not my actual mom. Rebecca shook her head. "Not your mother. The mother. The mother of the Calyptra." She smiled. "In a vision, of course." I shook my head at her, utterly confused. "Who is the mother?" I would have thought she considered herself the mother of the Calyptra. "Our goddess," Rebecca said. "She is our maker, the Eclipse Moth, the Calyptra Anima." I noticed that Rebecca's pupils were slightly enlarged and wondered if she was on Anima. She sounded dreamy and slightly disconnected, but it was early in the morning, so maybe she was just groggy. "I saw a moth," I said hesitantly, not sure whether I wanted to admit what I had decided could not be possible. She tasted my blood. I touched my forehead where the laceration had been. "But she didn't like it." "That's because you're Calyptra. The mother doesn't drink the blood of her children." "But it wasn't real," I said, sounding a little desperate, wanting Rebecca to agree with me. "It couldn't have been real." "When the veil comes down, you see what others can't," Rebecca said, which didn't really answer my question. "Did you know a group of moths is called an eclipse?" she asked, and I was somewhat relieved that she diverted the conversation away from the reality or unreality of what I'd seen. I shook my head at Rebecca's question. "Why are they called that?" "Because moths are obscure. Their coloring helps them blend with their surroundings so they can hide in plain sight, like the silent sun when the moon masks it in an eclipse. The sun is still there, only you can't see it. Moths are expert at disappearing, just like us. We disappeared right in the middle of the world, yet people rarely happen upon us here. And when they do, they don't know who or what we are. To them, we're merely people, They have no idea they've just encountered superior beings. The disdainful tone she used when talking about regular people put my back up, but I tried to brush it off. She probably didn't mean to sound as condescending as she did. Do you know why I built this place, Kenna? Why I gathered this family and introduced them to a new way of living? I said nothing, only looked at her expectantly and shook my head. When I was a little girl, I had a large family, she said. 3 brothers and 4 sisters, one of whom was my twin, Anya. She was your mother's namesake. Her stiff tone told me she considered naming my mother after her twin a mistake. Anya and I were the eldest of our siblings, she went on. Our mother and father were quite wealthy, so they could afford to give us the kind of lives most people only dream of. We lived in San Francisco and attended school there, but we spent our summers at our mother and father's country home, where we passed every day playing together from sunup to sundown, swimming in the river, riding horses, gardening, caring for animals, reading fairy tales beneath shade trees, taking music lessons. During those summers, it was as though we existed in a place without time, another world separate from the one that waited for us in the fall. Our own daydream realm, where we could be young forever. Young and happy and free. She paused, her mouth quivering at the corners. When I was 17, my youngest sister, Jillian, came down with influenza. We did all we could for her. My mother and Anya and I nursed her night and day, and my parents called in the best doctors, but it made no difference. Jillian died, and soon after my mother came down with the fever, and then my father fell ill. One by one my brothers and sisters sickened, and their fevers drowned them in sweat, and they coughed until their throats tore. They writhed and twisted in their sheets, fraught with delirium as I tried to hold them down and pour medicine into their throats, which they only coughed up along with blood. I was there with each of them when they died, because by the end I was the only one still well enough to care for them. I took care of them, but it made no difference. I swallowed hard, thinking of Erin, of the helpless dread I felt every time she caught a cold. Anya got sick too? I asked, although I wasn't really asking. I already knew. If Anya were alive, wouldn't she be here now? Rebecca nodded, and the tears in her eyes slid free and trailed down the sides of her nose. She wiped them absently. I haven't talked about Anya in a long time, but I think about her every day. I write down every memory I have of her to preserve her. She was brilliant, my sister. Brilliant and fascinated with learning, and kind to everyone. If there was any fairness in this world, she would have lived, not me. She was by far the better of the two of us. I'm sorry, I said, my own voice thick with emotion. Rebecca's twin sounded so much like Erin, and the way she felt about her twin was the same way I felt about mine, that she was the better of the two of us, that she deserved life, not me. I wondered why Rebecca had never mentioned a desire to meet Erin. I lost my entire family in the space of a month, Rebecca continued. For a long time after, I wished the influenza had taken me as well. But when I married and became pregnant with your mother, all of that changed. The marriage didn't last, but I had my Anya. I had a reason to live again. She wiped at one eye with her long, elegant fingers, naked of their silver rings. I created a eclipse for her, and I gathered a family for her, so she could have the kind of childhood I remembered, the kind I lost. A beautiful dream that would never end. Rebecca's mouth closed and she turned back toward the mountains, just as a sliver of sun appeared, spreading honeyed light across the farm. Do you hate her? I asked, fearing the answer, because I didn't want to believe it was possible to hate your own child. I didn't want to believe it was possible for my mom to hate me, even though I'd taken something intrinsic from her. Because of me, she was no longer Calyptra. How could she not hate me for that? Rebecca stared straight at the sun as it rose, her gaze unwavering, not even squinting against the brilliance. It was like she'd trained herself to look directly into the searing light. I used to believe love was not a choice, that a sister must love her sister, a child must love her parents, a mother must love her children. But now I know that you always have a choice, in everything you do and everyone you love and everyone you hurt. And so I no longer consider your mother my child. That is my choice. My heart lurched like I'd been punched in the chest. Then you must not consider me your granddaughter. She shook her head and turned to me, her skin and hair the color of champagne in the new light of day. You're Calyptra. That makes you family. Then I understood why she had never asked about Aaron, never mentioned a desire to meet my twin. Aaron wasn't Calyptra. She didn't have our power. She meant nothing to Rebecca. Nothing at all. During my time at Eclipse, I had formed a bond with Rebecca that obscured what I felt for my real mom. Even before Jason, she had kept me at a distance. And now I thought I knew why. Because I had taken her power and made her ordinary. But the idea that Rebecca cared nothing at all for my twin chipped away at my fledgling love for my grandmother, weakening it at its foundation. Do you miss them? Rebecca asked. She didn't have to say their names. I tapped my fingers on the balcony railing, creating a nervous rhythm. I didn't know how to answer her question. At first, being away from Aaron and Blake felt like being separated from two of my limbs. But the longer I was at Eclipse, the less I thought about my mom or Aaron or Blake. I was so busy immersing myself in the world of being Calyptra, in music and anima and unconditional acceptance, that I hadn't had time to miss them. It's complicated, I answered finally, and quickly changed the subject. Rebecca's story had brought up something, yet again, that I still didn't understand. Rebecca, where did we come from? I asked. I assume no one else in your family was Calyptra, or they would have been able to heal themselves, or be healed by you. Did you not know you were Calyptra back then? I thought of her use of the word influenza instead of simply calling it the flu. I tried to remember the last time there'd been an outbreak of the flu that killed entire families of people. I was pretty sure that hadn't happened in a really long time. Rebecca looked no older than 40, and a youthful 40 at that. My first night at Eclipse, she had said anima was the ultimate panacea, a vitamin that could cure any disease, heal any wound, as well as expand our consciousness, tearing down the veil between the mundane world and the ethereal. It made sense that anima extended life, but for how long? Were we to become immortal? Would any of us ever die? On and on. Every time I heard something new about the Calyptra, it opened the door to 100 more questions. Rebecca shook her head. I wasn't always Calyptra. None of us were. We chose what we are and became Calyptra. All of us, including your mother. And then she chose to cast off her gift. She smiled fondly at me, but something dark glittered in her eyes as she said, You are the only one of us who was born Calyptra, who never had a choice. She started to turn away, and I grabbed her sleeve. Why are we like this? Why can we do what we can do? What does any of it mean? Please, Rebecca, I want to understand. I want to know everything. She raised an eyebrow at me. You want to know things that only a true Calyptra can know. You said I was Calyptra, that I was family. Do you want to go home? She asked. The question jarred me. Yes. No. I mean, I do, but I want to be here too. I want to be in both places. She shook her head slowly, disappointed and clearly hurt. Until you choose us, you aren't one of us. I can't tell you what you want to know, and I can't let you live in our world. I sucked in a breath as though I'd been hit in the stomach. Rebecca, I said, not wanting to believe she'd meant what she had just said. I can't let you live in our world. Rebecca turned her back on me and went inside, signaling that our conversation was finished. If there was one thing I'd learned about my grandmother, it was that once she decided something was over, there was no changing her mind. Feeling hollowed out and emotionally drained, I followed her inside, where Cyrus was now sitting up, rubbing his eyes like a drowsy toddler who'd just awakened from a too short nap. But when he saw me, his eyes cleared and he stood up, a hank of dark curls tumbling over his brow.
"Are you okay?"
he asked, searching my face. I touched my brow where I'd split my scalp open, before realizing he wasn't referring to the wound. I felt another undeniable rush of warmth for him, but Rebecca's icy response froze my blood.
"She's fine," Rebecca answered for me. "In fact, I think she's ready to go home."
Last day. Bully ran at me full tilt when I called to him from the fence, and then bounced and bleated when I offered him the parting gift of an entire bunch of carrots. "I'm going to miss you, kid," I said as he munched distractedly on his treat. I tousled the wild tuft of hair between his ears, trying not to cry, not really succeeding. It had been 24 hours since Rebecca had decided to send me home, and I was still in shock. Every time I broke the news to another Calyptro that I was leaving, I had to white-knuckle my emotions to keep from bursting into tears. The next morning, Cyrus would drive me home. I should have been elated at the prospect of being reunited with Aaron and with Blake and my mom and my guitar. But mostly, I just felt anxious. I wasn't the same person I'd been when my mom had dropped me off at Eclipse. I didn't know if I would fit into my old space and my old world anymore.
"I don't understand why you have to leave all of a sudden," Cyrus said,
leaning against the fence beside me, arms folded tight across his chest. He'd been nearly as upset as I was when Rebecca told me I had to leave. We'd spent a lot of time together, and I'd grown attached to him, to his easy smile and his country boy charm. I woke up every day looking forward to seeing him, to taking Anima with him and feeling the connection between us grow, like we were sharing the same dream, the kind from which you never want to wake up. But I hadn't realized the feeling was mutual. Cyrus went so far as to question Rebecca's decision that morning after the Midnight Glory disaster, earning a sharp rebuke before my grandmother sent us away. "I must have done something to make her mad," I said.
"What were you talking about before she said it was time for you to go home?"
"A lot of things. She told me about her twin and why she founded Eclipse. And I asked her some questions she didn't want to answer because, I guess because I'm not really one of you." He nodded, eyes veiled, and I could see that a part of him agreed with Rebecca. Whatever secrets the Calyptra had, they didn't trust me with them yet, and maybe they never would. I gave Bully one last scratch behind the ears as he finished his carrots. He bolted back to the herd, feet barely touching the ground. "I'm going to miss him." I wiped at a tear leaking from the corner of my eye. "I'm going to miss everything about Eclipse, except maybe the Midnight Glory." I thought Cyrus would laugh, but he turned to me, his face serious.
"I'm going to miss you, Kenna."
He raked a hand through his tangled curls and looked at the toes of his boots.
"More than I know how to say. Eclipse is better with you as a part of it, as a part of us," he added softly.
For a moment, the air between us was charged, almost crackling with electricity. I felt myself pulled toward him, a kind of horizontal vertigo.
"Kenna!"
Cyrus and I both jumped at the sound of my name and turned to see Sunday jogging toward us through the field, afro bouncing and bracelets jangling. She had legs like an Olympic runner, and her dark skin practically glowed under the bright sunlight. She wore one of Ilya's creations, a short yellow sundress with tiny crystal buttons. She grabbed me by the wrist and tugged me away from Cyrus, toward Eclipse House.
"What's going on?"
I asked, scrambling to keep up with her. I glanced over my shoulder at Cyrus and saw him standing next to the fence, arms hanging heavily at his sides, and an abandoned puppy dog look on his face.
"I have to draw you before you leave," Sunday said. "Your face needs to be immortalized."
"It does?"
"Oh, yes. Those eyes of yours, the cheekbones, exquisite, just like Rebecca's."
Sunday led me to her studio and shut the door. Her studio was next to Ilya's, but I'd never been inside.
It seemed to have been designed with her particular skills in mind, as it was almost all windows and skylights, letting in light from every direction. There were stacks upon stacks of painted canvases covered in cloth leaning against the walls. Eclipse House was enormous, but clearly there was only so much wall space on which to hang her art. If I'd known she had so many unhung works lying around, I would have asked her for a few to decorate the bare walls of my room. "Is it okay if I look?" I asked Sunday, lifting the sheet that covered a row of finished canvases. Her back was turned to me. She was busy setting up for my portrait, gathering her paper and charcoal, and arranging a stool in the light, and merely grunted a reply that I took to mean yes. I peered beneath the sheet, expecting paintings like the rest that adorned the hallways and walls of Eclipse House, colorful, surreal depictions of what the world looked like through the lens of anima, when the veil was lifted to reveal the true splendor that most people would never know. But these paintings were nothing like the other works of Sunday's I'd seen. These I could only describe as troubling. My lips parted and I forgot to breathe as my eyes roamed the first painting, a disturbing depiction of bodies writhing in a pit, ringed by people with eclipse moths the size of baseball gloves perched on their faces, hiding their eyes, replacing them with black moons. The next painting was of an eclipse moth with its proboscis unfurled and inserted into the pupil of a small child. The third was of Rebecca. I knew it was her, even though a moth the size of a hardcover book had alighted on her face and concealed her eyes. I knew her by her mouth and her chin and her glorious hair. Where her eyes would have been, the eclipse moth's black moons represented them. In the painting, Rebecca was naked, her arms held out to her sides and her palms turned upward. In each palm she held a flaming moth, and a huge pair of powder-white wings extended from her back. There were more paintings, dozens more, all of them grim and disturbing, most featuring faces obscured by eclipse moths with flaming wings, and naked men and women with moth wings and oil-black eyes. But I didn't get a chance to peruse them. "What are you doing?" I whirled around to find Sunday staring me down, her hands on her hips and an expression on her face that was angry, but also fearful, as though she'd been caught stealing. I'd never seen her anything but happy and smiling and laughing that raucous, infectious laugh of hers, so this sudden change in her was as jarring as the sight of these grim, unsettling paintings she kept hidden away. She marched toward me and snatched the sheet out of my hands, lowering it over the paintings and obscuring them from view. "Those are private," she said sternly, though her voice was trembling slightly. I'm sorry, I stammered. "I asked you if I could look, but I guess you didn't hear me." She took a breath that lifted her shoulders and let it out in a loud huff. Then she smiled and waved her hand. "It doesn't matter," she said, all evidence to the contrary. "I just don't show my darker work to the others." I thought of the dozens of songs I'd written that I never shared with the Calyptra. They, too, were joyless, and the Calyptra were all about joy. I could see why Sunday kept these paintings to herself. I kind of wished I hadn't seen them at all. "Okay, are you ready to get naked?" Sunday asked, jerking me from my thoughts like a fish on a line. "What?" "Take off your clothes," she commanded. My hands automatically crossed over my chest. "I thought you wanted to immortalize my face." "Yes. Face, body, the whole you. Come on now, don't be shy, girl. You ain't got nothing I don't have." She laughed. She was always laughing. I'd never met anyone who found so many reasons to laugh as Sunday did. God, I was going to miss her and all the rest of the Calyptra. The idea of being separated from them after so many weeks of bonding made it hard for me to breathe. "Kenna," Sunday said, tapping her pencil impatiently. "Strip." I hesitated. I'd never been comfortable with my body, not because there was anything wrong with it, but because it had always felt like a secret, something I was supposed to keep hidden until I found someone I trusted completely to let him see it. Was Blake that person? My answer should have been an immediate yes, but it was Cyrus's face that swam into my mind. Sunday sat at her desk with her pencil poised, and a large piece of paper ready on her easel. I sighed and stripped off my dress. What could it hurt? We were both girls. Sunday's sharp eyes scrutinized me for a moment, before she instructed me in how to pose. I ended up sitting on a stool with my back to her, my face turned toward the window so she could draw my profile and the lines of my shoulders. My hair lay long and loose on my back, my face bare. My skin and hair had become luminous since I started taking enema, and my body, which had always been scrawny and a bit brittle, all joints and angles, had put on muscle, giving me curving hips and lean, rounded shoulders and hard, smooth legs. Sunday sketched in silence for several minutes, her focus complete and unwavering. "How does it look?" I asked. "Great," she said, smiling up at me. "Thank you for doing this. I've sketched everyone else around here about 1,000 times. It's nice to have a new model."
"Everyone? Naked?"
"Mm-hmm.
Even the men?"
"If you're wondering how Cyrus looks with his clothes off, the answer is he does not disappoint."
"I wasn't," I said, blushing.
"Okay," she said, chuckling.
"No, really.
I believe you, honey."
She was still laughing. Cyrus chose that moment to open the door and poke his head in. Sunday didn't even glance over to see who it was, just kept scratching on the paper with her pencil. But I scrambled for something to cover myself with, yanking the quilt off Sunday's bed and cocooning myself inside it. Cyrus lowered his gaze until I had the blanket securely covering me. But the desire I saw in his eyes made a fever of echoed lust roll across my skin. Sunday glared first at me, and then at Cyrus.
"Kenna, you better be able to find that exact pose again, or I'll have to start over."
"Cyrus, why are you bothering us?"
I don't know," Cyrus mumbled, then shook his head. "I mean, Rebecca wants to see you, Kenna."
"She'll be along shortly," Sunday said, and shooed him away. Cyrus withdrew, and I released my breath and slumped into the chair.
"I think I'm done for the day," I said.
"No, no, I'm almost finished. Look how gorgeous you are."
Sunday turned her sketch pad so I could see what she'd drawn.
I didn't realize I'd stopped breathing until my lungs began to plead for air. Sunday's talent was undeniable. In the space of 15 minutes, she'd brought a version of me to life on the page. The girl in the portrait was earthy and confident, even sensual. She was none of the things I was used to seeing. The girl in Sunday's drawing was some other version of me entirely. And I liked her. I wanted to stay her.
"You wanted to see me?" I asked, hesitating in the open doorway of Rebecca's room. Rebecca stood and came out from around her desk, her expression somber. "I've arranged a going-away party for you tonight. Nothing fancy. A small feast. A little singing and dancing afterward."
"You didn't have to do that," I said, even though I was touched.
"I wanted to see you off properly."
I lowered my eyes and shifted from one foot to the other. "Maybe I can come back in a couple of months?" Hopeful, I raised my eyes to find my grandmother shaking her head.
"I thought I made myself clear. You can't live in two worlds, Kenna. You have to choose one."
Her tone was laced with bitterness. I wondered if my mom had made the same request.
"Fine."
My cheeks flushed with anger. What Rebecca was asking of me wasn't fair. I couldn't write off Aaron and my mom and Blake like they meant nothing to me. I couldn't simply say goodbye to the world. It wasn't that cut and dried. I turned my back on her.
"If you ever want to see me again, you know where to find me."
Steak was in charge of the small going-away feast, which turned out not to be so small. When I entered the dining room that evening, I found it packed with so much food there was barely room for plates and silverware on the table. Rory, her dreads bound up in a scarf on top of her head, thrust a goblet filled with scarlet wine into my hand and tilted the glass to my lips. The wine went from my belly to my bloodstream fast, and I immediately started to feel looser and more relaxed. I glanced around and saw that Cyrus was nowhere to be found. He'd been MIA ever since he walked in on Sunday sketching my nude portrait. I wasn't sure I could look him in the eye now, and maybe he felt the same way about me.
"Do you know where Cyrus is?" I asked.
Rory shrugged, the spaghetti strap of her camisole slipping off her shoulder.
"I'm sure he'll turn up."
For once, Rebecca arrived before everyone was seated.
while we were still mingling. She glided into the dining room then and poured herself a glass of wine. She raised it in a toast. The room, which had previously been filled with chatter, quieted in an instant.
"To my granddaughter, Kenna," Rebecca said.
She met my eyes and smiled.
"Who is welcome to return to Eclipse, any time she wants."
My lips parted and a silent breath escaped. Murmurs sounded throughout the room. Then Rebecca raised her wine glass a little higher, and the rest of the Calyptra said,
"To Kenna!"
Everyone drank except for me. I couldn't take my eyes from my grandmother. Rebecca set her goblet on the table, stepped close to me, and wrapped me in a warm hug. For a moment, I was too stunned to hug her back.
"I can really come back?" I asked.
She nodded against my hair.
"Just promise me one thing. No more questions, not until you choose our world and our way over all others."
"I promise," I said without hesitation. It was an arrangement I could live with if it meant I got to return to Eclipse. She held me back and took my face in both of her hands. Her skin carried the most minute charge, and I felt it sink into me and galvanize my brain, so I wanted to jump up and down and whoop with joy. I could come back to Eclipse any time I wanted. Rebecca loved me. She wanted me to be with her. I had never felt such elation. I wanted to dash into the yard and run with abandon like Bully did, and sing at the top of my lungs. Instead, I ate and ate and ate. Each bite was more delicious than the last. There was so much food, it took almost 2 hours to eat it all. Spicy carrot soup, salad with peaches and goat cheese, rosemary bread and roasted turkey, sautéed mushrooms over mashed potatoes, flaky lemony trout and asparagus and zucchini slathered in butter. For dessert, there was lemon cake with blueberry sauce. Throughout the meal, someone kept refilling my goblet when I wasn't looking, so by the time I took my last bite, I wasn't sure how much I'd had to drink, and I wasn't sure I cared. My head was swimming. I was dizzy with love and acceptance, and a happiness so pure it was thrilling. I was young and alive and free, free to return to the place where I belonged. Rebecca announced that cleanup could wait until the morning. The Calyptra piled from the house and congregated around the fire pit. Rebecca brought out a culling jar wrapped in a colorful scarf, and one by one the Calyptra took from it, strands of Venus sipping at the effervescent energy that sparkled around the lid. When it was my turn to take, I opened my mouth to ask what kind of anima it was, but Rebecca gave me a warning look.
"No more questions, remember?"
I nodded and took. And the life inside me amplified to 100. The world around me lit up with night colors, vibrant indigos and lavenders and emeralds, and the stars became shattered crystal fireworks. Yuri and Diego had built up a raging bonfire that reached toward the moon, flames dancing to the music that filled the air. And the Calyptra danced, too. I joined in the fray, the night whirlpooling around me, a swirling mixture of navy blue sky and orange firelight and streaks of white stars. When the anima wore off, I slipped away from the group to find something else to cull, though I wanted more of whatever was in that jar. I hungered for it in a way that reminded me of the days after Jason Dunn's death. I didn't realize someone had followed me until she spoke at my back.
"Did you find it?"
I spun around to find Joanna standing a foot behind me. I clutched my chest.
"You almost gave me a heart attack."
I'd nearly forgotten about Joanna and my promise to Rebecca not to talk to her. Rebecca was big on asking for promises, it seemed. I glanced toward the fire to see my grandmother watching me, eyes narrowed as though in warning. "I should get back to the fire," I said, easing away from Joanna. She grabbed my arm and held me in place.
"Did you find it?"
I shook my head.
"I don't know."
"In the guitar," she broke in.
"Your mother's guitar."
"You put something in there?" That could explain why the sound had never been right. Her fingers tightened on my arm until they dug in, and I saw her teeth were clenched behind her lips.
"Don't come back here, Kenna."
I pulled gently away. "Look, I understand that you don't like outsiders." Again, she cut me off.
"You think you know us after a few weeks, but you don't. You'll never be one of us, and it's better that way. Believe me.
Your mom was smart. A lot smarter than me." I felt like the ground had dropped out from under my feet. Look, I don't know what I did to make you hate me. Whatever it is, I'm sorry. I don't hate you. I'm trying to help you. She stepped back from me, searching my eyes. But maybe it's too late for that. She stared at me for a moment before saying, "Tell your mother something for me, okay?" Her voice began to tremble with emotion. "Tell her she was right, and I was wrong, and tell her I wish I'd come with her. I wish it more than I can ever say." Then she turned and walked quickly toward the house, leaving me standing on the grass, staring after her. I forgot about finding something to cull. My brain was buzzing with uncertainty and bewilderment. When I felt a hand on my shoulder, I startled and whipped around.
"Did I scare you?"
Cyrus stood behind me, holding a piece of rope that was tied to a leather collar around Bully's neck. "A little." I blew out a breath and laughed off Joanna's cryptic words. She didn't like me, that was all. She was trying to scare me into staying away from Eclipse because of whatever had happened between her and my mom. And something had definitely happened. All that stuff about my mom being right and her being wrong, about wishing she'd come with her. There was history there. Maybe I could get my mom to tell me what had happened between her and Joanna.
"I wanted to show you something," Cyrus said,
breaking through my distracted thoughts. He crouched behind Bully and motioned for me to do the same.
"Look."
He turned the leather collar on Bully's neck so I could read the word embossed on it. "Bully."
"Now everyone will know who he belongs to."
"Thank you." My heart swelled like an inflating balloon, and I threw my arms around Cyrus's neck. He hugged me back, burying his face in my hair, and I thought how amazing it was to be able to touch other people. This person in particular. I let my body relax into the embrace. Cyrus's body was warm as an oven, and his hair was soft as rabbit fur against my cheek.
"Do you want to dance?"
he said close to my ear, lips brushing my skin, making me shiver. "What about Bully?" Cyrus released me and tied Bully's makeshift leash to the nearest fence post. Bully immediately began chewing through his leash. "Yeah, that's not going to hold him," I said.
"Not forever, but it'll last long enough for a dance. Come on."
He took my hand and led me toward the fire. The music slowed to an undulating, sultry rhythm, and Cyrus pulled me snug against him. My chest pressed to his as we rocked side to side. Cyrus's hand branded the center of my back, his breath warm on my ear.
"Eclipse isn't going to be the same without you," he said. "I forgot what it was like to get to know someone I've never met."
Before I could stop them, the words that had been balanced on the tip of my tongue all day fell. "I'm not ready to go home," I told him. "I want to ask Rebecca if I can stay a little longer." Suddenly the music was replaced by a shout of alarm as two neon-bright high beams cut through the night, headlights moving fast toward Eclipse. "Trespasser!" Hitomi cried, pointing at the lights. She clutched at Diego's arm, her eyes wide and filled with fear, as though the arriving car signaled an invasion. Maybe it did. For a moment, the Calyptra remained collectively paralyzed, me included. My heart was galloping and my feet seemed frozen to the ground. But that lasted only a few seconds before Cyrus shouted to the crowd,
"You know what to do."
I turned to him, blinking. Maybe the Calyptra did, but I didn't. Cyrus seemed to sense my distress and took me by the arms.
"It's okay,"
he said.
"We'll find out what they want and deal with them. There are far more of us."
I nodded, though this didn't exactly make me feel better. The Calyptra reacted to Cyrus's shout the way well-trained students do during a fire drill. After an initial moment of disorder and uproar, they formed a line, or in this case, more of a wall, and waited for further instruction from their leader. Rebecca stepped up beside Cyrus and me. Her expression remained as composed as ever, but her back was rigid and straight. She glanced at Cyrus.
"How did this trespasser get through the gate?"
Cyrus shook his head.
"No idea. Bolt cutters on the padlock, maybe? Or they drove straight through it."
"Then whoever's driving must want something from us very badly." Rebecca's eyes cut to me, and I realized what she was implying. Whoever was driving toward Eclipse had come for me. I experienced a moment of panic, but it evaporated when I recognized Blake's forerunner.
Blake!
I bolted toward his SUV before he'd even come to a full stop. Then he was out the door and crushing me in a hug. I hugged him back fiercely, realizing this was the first time I'd been able to touch him without fear of hurting him. His mouth next to my ear breathed my name.
Kenna!
As though he wanted to remind me of it. Remind me who I was. I buried my face in his neck.
Are you all right?
He asked. I nodded against him.
What are you doing here? I'll tell you in the car. We have to go.
His tone was grim. I pulled away from him.
Why? What's wrong?
He hesitated, but only for a moment.
It's Erin, he said. She's sick again. She needs you.
I stopped breathing, and when I started again, it was too fast. I hadn't had an asthma attack since I'd culled that first wildflower with Cyrus. I'd barely even thought about my asthma. Every day I had grown stronger and healthier. Meanwhile, back at home, Erin had been doing the opposite. I didn't hesitate. Before I knew it, we were in the Forerunner and Blake was driving us away from Eclipse. I realized too late that I hadn't said a single goodbye. I craned around in my seat and saw Rebecca through the back windshield, her expression furious and frustrated, and Cyrus at her side, his mouth turned down and his eyes forlorn. They quickly disappeared from view behind us, but I couldn't stop seeing their faces every time I closed my eyes. Returned. It was past midnight when Blake turned onto the long drive that led to my house. It was strange to be aware of time again. There were no clocks at Eclipse. Things happened when they happened. Would I spend the rest of my life comparing life at Eclipse to reality? The woods around my house were as dead as they'd been when I left. Deader, even. There was no color in our forest, only shades of gray. Ash and charcoal and slate and smoke, juxtaposed against Eclipse with its vibrant green and amber grasses and wildflower fields. My home was the color of a funeral dirge. I wondered how Erin and my mom could stand to be here, surrounded by such bleakness. How would I be able to stand it? It doesn't matter, I reminded myself. Erin was all that mattered right now. We found Erin asleep in her bed, the blankets pulled to her chest. Mom sat beside her, holding her hand. There was a bandage wrapping Erin's head, and another wrapping her right wrist.
Mom?
I said when I entered. Blake hung back in the hallway behind me. My mom turned her head, and I saw her cheeks were streaked with tears. The youthful radiance had faded from her face, and she looked more like herself again. Beautiful, but like a regular person. Not like the Calyptra with their angelic glow. I didn't know what to expect from the reunion with my mom. She stood and came to me, studied my face for a long moment, and then held out her hand to me tentatively, like I might bite.
I'm okay now, I assured her. I swear.
Ever since my mistake with the Midnight Glory, I'd been that much more focused on control. Mom nodded, but didn't close the gap between us.
Thank you for coming home,
she said in an odd, formal tone, as though I were a stranger, a guest. Had she written me off already? Had she expected never to see me again? The thought made a searing concoction of anger and dejection boil in my stomach. Mom lowered her hand instead, and turned back to Erin, launching into an account of my sister's deteriorating condition. She was fine until this afternoon, or I thought she was. Then she went out for a walk and she didn't come back. I found her by the river, unconscious. She was bleeding from a cut on her head, and her wrist was broken. When she came round, she told me she was hit with a wave of fatigue, the way it used to happen. She passed out and hit her head. She broke her wrist when she fell.
You didn't take her to a hospital?
My mom's answer was bitter.
Why?
So they can set her bone and tell me there's nothing more they can do, and then send me on my way. Mom took a breath and let it out, trying to compose herself. After I found her by the river, she admitted the old symptoms had started to manifest. She said she'd been short of breath. She'd felt heart murmurs. She tired too easily. She hadn't wanted to tell me in case it was nothing. She wanted to be normal for as long as she could. Didn't want me to start fussing over her and taking her to doctors again. Mom covered her face and her shoulders shook as she began to cry. I can't do it all over again. I can't wake up every day knowing I'm going to lose my sweet girl.
I felt distant as I watched my mom cry, separated from my emotions, even without Anima inside me. All I could think about was what I now knew about my mom, that she had lost her power because of me. That if she hadn't had me, she would still be Calyptra, residing in paradise. If loving people was truly a choice, as Rebecca claimed, then my mom must hate me. And I had to admit, I hated her a little bit, too. All these years I could have been healing Aaron with my anima. She could have lived a normal life instead of the pitiable existence she'd been born into. She'd nearly died more times than I could remember, and my mom had never asked me to help her, never guided me. My mom would have rather let Aaron die than let me be what I was and help my twin, and I hated her for that.
Can you help her?
My mom asked, but too late for me to ever forgive her. Instead of answering her, I turned to Blake and motioned him into the room. He stepped forward tentatively, like he wasn't sure his presence was appropriate. That was Blake, always considerate, always thoughtful. My feelings for him were still there, but they seemed subdued now, like they'd been shot up with a tranquilizer. Blake, can you carry Aaron? I asked him dubiously. Blake looked like a little boy compared to Cyrus. I wasn't sure he was strong enough. But Blake nodded, eyes wide with curiosity.
Well, of course. Where are we going?
Into the forest, I said, and then turned back to face my mom. Wrap her up in a blanket and keep her arm stabilized. We're going for a walk. Aaron roused briefly when Blake picked her up out of bed and cradled her against his chest. Her lids fluttered open, and when she saw me, a sleepy smile curled the corners of her mouth, and my heart ached for the healthy, transformed version of her she'd been when I saw her last. She wore an old pair of her glasses with a crack in one of the lenses.
I'm so glad you're here, she said, her eyelids sagging closed again.
My mom had given her pain medication for her broken wrist, and it made her drowsy. Me too, I said, and hoped she didn't hear the lie in my voice. I wasn't complete without my sister, but that didn't mean I was happy to be home, surrounded by reminders of death, of the terrible things I'd done, and the terrible consequences those things had garnered. But Aaron, more than any person I would ever know, was my soulmate and always would be. There was a reason I hadn't been able to say goodbye to her in the hospital, the time she'd been so certain she was about to die. Without her, the best part of me would be gone, and I didn't know if I could live like that. I thought of Rebecca and her twin, the two of them so much like Aaron and me, and my heart ached for my grandmother. I understood why she felt the need to create a place like Eclipse, to try to recreate what was lost and make it last forever. And I understood why my mother leaving her was such a betrayal. Aaron drifted back to sleep, and I brushed at the tears leaking from the corners of my eyes. I took the lead as we marched through the dead woods toward the river. My mom and I carried flashlights. I shone mine around the forest where I used to spend so many hours with my guitar. Now the fragile, leafless trees were blackened and haunting, like skeletons made of needles and splinters. While we walked, we heard frequent crashes as heavy branches fell and burst into dust. As soon as we stepped into the living part of the forest, the air felt lighter, easier to breathe. I drew in a lungful and let it out slowly, turning in a circle. I didn't know how much I would have to cull to heal Aaron again, but I couldn't cull wildly the way I had last time and risk losing control this time. If only I had one of Rebecca's jars, this would be easy. But I doubted Rebecca would ever sacrifice one of her precious jars to save a non-Calyptra, even her own granddaughter. Blake, will you lay Aaron down in this clearing? I said, kneeling to pat an area soft with pine needles. He did as I asked, panting with the exertion of carrying her. Then he and my mom stood on either side of me, waiting for my next move and giving me stage fright. I didn't think I could cull with them watching me, especially Blake, since he'd never seen what I could do. I wondered how it would look to him, if he would find the Vena beautiful or terrifying. Either way, I wasn't ready to find out. I need privacy so I can concentrate, I told them. Will you wait for me back at the house? I'd rather stay close to make sure everything is okay,
Mom said. Translation, she didn't trust me to keep Aaron safe. I narrowed my eyes at her. If anyone didn't trust anyone at this point, it was I who didn't trust her. All the secrets she'd kept from me, all of the ways our lives could have been better if she'd only taken me to Eclipse to learn about myself sooner. No, it was she who couldn't be trusted. I can't do it with you watching me, I said plainly, and held up my hands as though to say that's all there is to it. Finally, my mom nodded. We'll come back in 20 minutes to check on you. Fine. Good. I was growing impatient. My mom knelt and kissed my sleeping sister on her forehead, and then disappeared into the woods, her flashlight beam cutting the dark. Blake lingered a moment longer, crouching down beside me. Hey, he said. Are you okay with this? You seem a bit uncertain. I'm okay, I lied. Just worried about Aaron. I don't understand much of what's happening.